Welcome to a podcast presentation from Nurse Educator. I'm Dr. Richard Pullen, editorial board member of Journal. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Grace Sun and Dr. Steph Helscher from Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center School of Nursing in Lubbock, Texas. Dr. Sun is associate professor. She is a board-certified family nurse practitioner and teaches in the nurse practitioner programs. She is a member of several professional organizations, including the American Association of Nurse Practitioners, National Organization of Nurse Practitioners, and Texas Nurse Practitioners. Her current areas of interest include curriculum development and design, informatics, emerging technologies, integrative healthcare, and interprofessional education. Dr. Helscher is associate professor and director of the MSN in Informatics program. She is board certified in nursing informatics and a fellow in the Healthcare Information and Management Systems Society. Dr. Helscher has served as a national advisor with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Adapting Clinical Guidelines for the Digital Age Project in its various forms since 2017. Her current areas of expertise and research are informatics, including documentation burden and using artificial intelligence in policy and academic curriculum. Well, today is a very important topic that I know that nurse educators and nurses around the globe can identify with, the ChatGPT storm and what faculty can do. And before we begin the podcast, I want to congratulate Dr. Sun and Dr. Helscher for having this topic published in Nurse Educator. I encourage our listeners to obtain this well-written article and glean some information they can use in their nursing programs. Welcome, Grace and Steph.
Thank you so
Thanks
much,
so
Richard.
Thanks so much, Richard.
And thank you to Nurse Educator. We are thrilled to be here.
Absolutely. And again, thank you for spending time with us and me today. All of these terms out there, artificial intelligence, chatterbot, chat, generative, pre-trained transformation, all of these complicated terms. And I know that you both will clarify them today. So thank you. My first question, I think I'm going to ask Steph. Steph, your article is about chat GPT. Could you or would you provide a brief explanation of what that is and its relationship with this big term we're hearing, artificial intelligence?
Absolutely, Richard, and thank you so much for having us in this question. Mm-hmm, ChatGPT is, yes, it's exploded. And as you said, GPT stands for Generative Pre-trained Transformer, and it is a type of artificial intelligence, specifically what we like to call chatbots. It's actually the brainchild of a company named OpenAI, and ironically, Elon Musk helped co-found it back in 2015. Yeah, he left to go join. I think there was a conflict of interest with one of his other companies, so he stepped out. But it's really designed to have this human-like text responses based on what we put into it, any kind of textual input or query the product receives. So when you're really talking about chatbots, it's good to have a good base understanding of AI or artificial intelligence itself, which really at the most basic level is going to be a development of a computer system. And these computer systems perform tasks that typically us humans have to help train it. It requires that human intelligence interface, such as learning and problem solving. It can do decision making, all sorts of wonderful tasks and job outputs it can do. It really does, though, involve algorithms, human generated code and algorithms. statistical models that help it analyze and interpret all these data sets that we give it. And from those data, these data, it makes the predictions and automates output for us. So it really is quite the wonderful tool. Knowing that ChatGPT is an artificial intelligence, the other part you probably need to understand is its language model. Or in this case, it's called a large language model. And the language model was released back in November. That's when they kicked out ChatGPT. And it was running off its original GPT 3.5 architecture. GPT-4 was actually soft release just this past week, and it is going to dwarf its predecessor. It's called a multimodal language model, and it's trained to generate text from text descriptions. So before you could put in text and it would spit out text. Now you can put in text and images and it will spit out text from that. And actually it's textual, it's a image sister program, is called DALL-E. So ChatGPT can't really spit out images, but it's very much used as a deep learning approach for analyzing and interpreting all of our user input, and us, we're the users. Right now we're helping train these artificial intelligence programs online through OpenAI's website for ChatGPT. And it uses our training to generate these responses based on its understanding of context and our language patterns, which is what makes this very unique as far as AIs. It's such a natural speech pattern and writing pattern of what it spits back out to us based on a request. And it's a very good example of cutting edge AI technology, and it's so rapidly advancing with the field of natural language processing and machine learning, which is a subset of AI. So these huge data sets that we train it off of can lead to some pros and cons and ethical issues, which I'm sure that Grace and I will be talking about later. But that's really ChatGPT in a nutshell. It's a very base level.
Well, good deal. Thank you for sharing, Steph. So very complicated. And it is amazing the type and the volume of technology that we have today. I remember when I first saw an IV pump back in 1978, and I thought, wow, that is pretty tech savvy. But look where we are today. Just amazing. Well, thank you. Well, let's see, Grace, I think my next question is, I see in your article you mentioned something about the advantage, well, you did, about the advantages and disadvantages of chatbots. Could you elaborate on the significant benefits of utilizing chatbots in an academic setting?
Sure. So if you've read the news, there's definitely been a lot of negative press about ChatGPT. Yeah. Concerns with academic integrity, cheating, plagiarism, that list goes on and on. Yeah. And while we do recognize the valid concerns, we really wanted to make sure faculty could be made aware of all the immense benefits that ChatGPT and chatbox could provide. And not just kind of ban its use completely, which has been kind of the initial knee-jerk reaction amongst many faculty and institutions. Yes. So first off, ChatGPT, it can help enhance student engagement. It provides one-on-one immediate assistance to students, which makes it really convenient, and it really increases the student interaction with their material and their content. They're not losing time waiting for a human, either their faculty, a tutor, or a peer to respond. It is available 24/7 on your time. And this is really helpful for both faculty and students. You know, everyone has different schedules, especially for us here at Texas Tech Health Sciences Center. We heavily utilize distance education and asynchronous remote learning. And so some study and work at 4 a.m., some study and work at 10 p.m. Some students study mostly on the weekends. Some faculty prefer not to work except on the weekdays. So the convenience the efficiency, the personalized assistance for both students and faculty makes this really an indispensable tool that I think, you know, we think that we should be familiar with in academia, if not kind of just outright embrace. One of the most helpful aspects of ChatGPT really is its ability to help with writing. We know that students' writing proficiency, especially with scholarly writing, with formal writing, this is an ongoing headache for faculty nationwide across every institution. And it takes faculty a long time to grade when we have to revise the writing. In many cases, we end up rewriting most of what the student wrote. So for faculty, this is a huge time saver. Put the student's writing into ChatGPT, ask it to rewrite it, and it will immediately generate a beautifully written paragraph that's of a much higher quality than the original input. And I would take this one step further and advise faculty to recommend students to use this. As far as that plagiarism is concerned, I do want to address that. You know, we don't call it plagiarism when students submit work that's gone through their writing centers or through tutors or something like Grammarly. We don't call it plagiarism when faculty have to revise and rewrite a large portion of it, and then they just submit it, you know, they just submit what we wrote as their revision. So why would we call it plagiarism if students submitted their written work into ChatGPT and asked for it to revise their writing? Now, granted, this is different than just asking ChatGPT to generate something from nothing. And our article does talk about strategies to minimize that. But really, the writing assistance, it's phenomenal. It gets immediate feedback. It provides some opportunities for learning and teaching. Because a lot of times, like I said, faculty, we don't have that kind of time. Many times we deduct points and tell students to go get tutoring for their writing. Most of the times, at least in my experience, they don't do that. So in the end, there's not much learning and there's not much teaching with regards to improving their writing. With ChatGPT, that can change. And so if faculty and students like only do one thing with this, I would highly recommend them look into it for using it to help with writing. It can also help both faculty and students by summarizing articles, generating outlines, providing study materials. It can generate study questions, answers with rationales. This is an extremely beneficial tool for both faculty and students in helping them be more efficient with their study. A lot of students, we find, you know, they struggle, and it's not because they didn't spend time studying. They study, but their studying is inefficient. Sometimes there's too much information. They don't know what to process. Right. They don't know how to process it. And ChatGPT is a very effective studying tool that faculty can use to help direct students in their studying. In terms of research or inquiry, ChatGPT is a quick way to help get both faculty and students started with like immediate output of comprehensive summaries, generalized overviews, okay? And as I mentioned earlier, you know, and in our article, this is a great tool, but it is a tool. You can't assume that everything it puts out is accurate. So both faculty and students need to have a critical and discerning eye in using it, which really, if you think about it in and of itself, this is a great teaching strategy because we're always trying to teach students about critical thinking, about synthesizing the information, analyzing the situation, evaluating what they have compared to where they need to be. And this applies now to the technology we have that's available. And they need to learn how to critically analyze when to use it and how to best use it appropriately. So overall, really, something like ChatGPT or AI-driven chatbots have the potential to transform the academic experience for both faculty and students. And it's going to make education much more accessible, much more effective, and most importantly, in a time when there's high burnout amongst both faculty and students, this technology makes education much more efficient.
Well, Grace, listening to you, you have eased my anxiety about artificial intelligence because I'm among many people in academia who have had a knee-jerk, as you mentioned, reaction or emotional response. Oh no, cheating! But I think I'm hearing you say is that these new and innovative technologies will are tools that will help our students to critically think, use clinical reading, yes, better papers. And it's going to require, or it does require, a paradigm shift in the way we're thinking as faculty, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
About this. So a lot of being open to the possibilities of maximizing the technology to promote student work, but also to help faculty in their the best management of their time. So what I hear is you folks will be doing a lot of education in your College of Nursing, but probably nationally with other experts in the field, helping us to understand what the benefits are. And of course, to any wonderful tool, there can be some limitations too. But that can be addressed through education. Well, thank you so much, Grace. I'm getting pumped up about this now. Less anxious. Okay. Well, Steph, I have a question for you. Let's see. The application of AI and chatbots raises numerous, here's one I'm concerned about, ethical issues. Would you provide some examples of what that might be?
Yes. So this is a little bit of the flip side of what Grace was talking to. And I am absolutely supportive of the use of AI as well, but within the confines of some sort of structure and understanding.
Sure.
And this could include policy development. There are many examples out there for your facilities to look at about policy verbiage that can be updated or implemented to address the use of AI. It's not really going to go anywhere. And if they didn't know about it already, they do now. So it has to be addressed. So ethically, I'd kind of mentioned before about data sets. When you're crawling through the internet and you look at disinformation, which has been a huge issue with the pandemic, with anything else going on in social media, think about that data and all the disinformation is out there. When you have data sets like that your AI is crawling through and making its determinations off of, that's a little skewed and can come out in what AI tells you in its response.
Scary.
So, yes. So bias and discrimination is one of the biggest issues.
Wow.
And it's really, you have to go in with your eyes open when you look at what it's spitting out right now. And Grace talked about this as well. Chatbots and AI can perpetuate bias and discrimination, particularly in areas of race, ethnicity, gender, socioeconomic status. All this could potentially lead to unequal treatment and outcomes. We already have recognize bias as clinicians at the bedside.
Yeah.
But when your AI is also reflecting that, it's just something you have to be cognizant of when you're using it. Several articles out there regarding bias as related to the AI and what it spits out when you talk to it or use it in healthcare. From an informaticist point of view, also tied to healthcare, of course, is data privacy and security, which anytime you're working with any protected health information, HIPAA, you gotta protect patients' privacy and their data security. And so chatbots and AI have the potential to collect and store an obscenely large amount of personal and sensitive data that can be very vulnerable to data breaches, cyber attacks, jailbreaking. All this raises concerns about PHI, patient privacy and confidentiality of their data. Mm-hmm. And when you're uploading, say, like a student's document because you want to help you review it and give good feedback, what did you just hand the AI? Did it have any identifiers in it? Is the student naming themselves or you or the facility by name? Even if you delete it, it's there somewhere. Always data is discoverable on the back end, whether it's an EHR or these online sites. Essentially, anytime you sign an agreement with any app, you've just given away your data. And there's been statistics that like maybe more than 70% of those apps out there that you play with, your data is gone the minute you sign. So you give them your name, your password, your phone number, et cetera, it's gone. And sites that operate AI, they're still businesses. So they do collect your data. So that's just something to think about as well, data privacy and security. AI also really has a lack of human empathy. There's some things AI can't do that only us as humans can do at this point. And it's really only working off algorithms we give it. So chatbots and AIs, they really just lack that emotional intelligence, the empathy of human healthcare providers, what we can do to affect patient experience and satisfaction. And that's also good from the academic point of view. If you're trying to use AI for writing, et cetera, then possibly you would ask the students, if they're doing something like a discussion board, to include personal experiences, because AI can't replicate your experience. All they can replicate is the data and the algorithms they've been provided. So that's a little hint to help curb your writing assignments a little bit, have the students incorporate personal experiences at their job site or with their families. Another aspect, of course, is accountability and transparency. It can be very difficult to determine who's responsible for any of these decisions that are made by chatbots, AI. It raises questions about accountability and transparency. When you use any type of output from a chatbot, it's crawled through many, many, many publications and documents out there, but not really able to cite it as a source. So if it's going through our publication, your publications, et cetera, it doesn't say, this is from Dr. Pullen, this is from Dr. Sun, whoever. It just slams all that data together into one big output. So there could be type of ownership of products issues, ownership of licensures, et cetera, whenever you're publishing, all that type of things cannot really be taken into credit. You can't give credit to it yet because it's just slamming them all together and spitting out one big answer. So that goes into transparency. When this first hit really big in December, these journal markets really became super saturated with ChatGPT generated documents and articles, where some journals have had to put in clauses that says ChatGPT is not allowed to be your co-author. We don't recognize AI as a co-author. So that's something to think about as well. And if you're using any type of AI for your writing, what responsibility do you have to disclose that? Or do you use something called a rewerder or a rephraser? Grace had mentioned Grammarly. Grammarly is getting ready to step into the AI forum as well. I had a survey from them a couple weeks ago. They're getting ready to jump in on this cash cow of AI.
I'm sure.
And so you do have to take it a little bit from a step further. You've got a rephraser and a grammar checker like Grammarly that already helps you rephrase things. You know, you're going to go one step further to also act like a true chatbot a bit as well. So that's coming on the horizon. Really, the only other thing I would say as a high-level AI issue is probably informed consent, and this relates back to healthcare. Patients really need to be informed if you're using AI in their care, and they should probably have verbiage in their consent for the data that it's collecting and using, or if it's in the decision-making processes. So I know there's clinical decision support out there. AI is just a step past it. And AI can help inform equipment and machines based on the health data it's getting as to what is the next step that a clinician can do. Now, Grace already alluded to this as well. This is not supposed to replace critical thinking skills, but it's so easy to happen. And that's another ethical issue that really needs to be thought about before just jumping in with both feet and using it at the bedside in healthcare or in academia.
Yes. deal, Steph, as Grace said earlier, she showcased all the strengths, the benefits of these technologies, and that's a good thing. And then you talked about some limitations, and not just limitations, but outright concerns, ethical concerns, but also a lot of these could be legal issues mm-hmm. too. Yeah. And I think you both are saying, and I think, Steph, you mentioned earlier about having a policy. There needs to be clearly written policies by schools of nursing and or overarching parent yeah. institutions and university, community colleges, other healthcare facilities that clearly outline the purposes and the benefits, limitations, ethical, legal, and when to use all of these technologies. And it does not take the place of caring, compassionate people in the implementation of these technologies or the critical thinking skills. So a lot of wonderful things happening, and at the same time paralleling that cause effect, we have some issues to clearly map out. But it's an exciting time, and I could talk forever and learn from both mm-hmm. of you about this topic, but I better wind it down with one more question, if you don't mind. And Grace, I think I'll ask you, considering the drastic increase in AI utilization, what implications can we expect for healthcare and learning in the future? Your thoughts?
Wow, we might need more than 15 minutes we have on this podcast to talk about this one.
Just a few more minutes.
So what people may not realize is we're already using AI in healthcare and education. Mm-hmm. And so Steph brought up a really good point about the need for consent and then the need for policies. You know, I'll backtrack mm-hmm. a little bit. So it's ironic that Elon Musk, who's one of the founders of OpenAI, mm-hmm. this company, when he backed out of it, he made comments that AI is going to doom humanity. It's very dangerous. And the reason why he said that is because it's totally not regulated. Mm-hmm. And so that goes back to, it is a concern. We have a vastly powerful tool that can be very beneficial, but we have to be really diligent about policies and regulations and keeping it kind of within confines that we're able to really control it and manage its use. But so going back, it's mm-hmm. already in use. You know, there are already AI mm-hmm. programs helping with medical imaging. So we have AI algorithms that are already analyzing x-rays, CAT scans, MRIs. They're able to detect and diagnose conditions with sensitivities, specificities, and accuracy exceeding those of a human consistently. Mm-hmm. There are AI programs to help with identification and diagnosis of skin conditions, of dermatological disorders. The clinical decision support that we have in a lot of our EHRs, you know, many EHRs and institutions are incorporating more and more of AI technology to help providers make more informed and accurate diagnosis and treatment recommendations. Most of the mobile devices, the patient monitoring devices, a lot of those that we're using, they all utilize some sort of AI. There's robot-assisted surgery. AI can right. assist surgeons in performing very complex procedures and at the same time provide real-time feedback, real-time guidance based on analytics of real-time data. Personalized medicine, precision medicine, that is a huge field these days. The pharmacogenetics, pharmacogenomics, they all utilize AI. Yeah. Yeah. On top of that, AI is being used to analyze existing large data sets to identify potential new drug candidates, to identify potential new things that could be tested and developed into new treatments. Yeah. And since we have EHRs with a ton of data, AI can be used to manage and analyze all that EHR data that we have. It can provide insights into patient health trends. It can do predictive analytics. It can identify risk factors that a human might overlook or might not have even considered. It can provide alternative treatment recommendations. It could provide statistical variance of potential treatments and outcomes and considerations. It goes on and on. you know, in terms of education, we've talked a bit about how AI can assist with learning and education, provides one-on-one tutoring, feedback, support. It allows educators to more efficiently tailor instruction to individual student needs and abilities. In academia, there is an increased interest in personalized and precision learning, similar to personalized and precision medicine, and this can be done with AI. And most importantly, with the new AACN essentials and the move towards competency-based education, we know that every nursing program in this country is scrambling to figure out how to make this transition. AI can be a very effective tool for faculty, for programs, for institutions to assess student competencies, track student progress, analyze student performance. Basically, it can optimize all of our programs to more effectively and efficiently assess, analyze, and improve student outcomes. And this really can enhance our overall educational quality. As I mentioned earlier, you know, ChatGPT or any AI-driven technology, you know, it's an immensely powerful and indispensable tool. But at the end of the day, we can't emphasize enough, it is still a tool. It requires a discerning and astute human overseer to ensure its appropriate and accurate use. You know, Steph mentioned there are ethical concerns, potential bias, security issues, transparency issues, accountability issues, over-reliance issues. But as long as we recognize the limitations and teach our peers and our students to learn how to recognize the limitations and learn to critically analyze its judicious use, we can do so much more than we ever imagined. I don't know about you, Richard, but I'm extremely excited to see what we can do and how far we can go with all of this.
I am excited about it. I'm ready to be on a task force or a think tank to develop a policy. When I say a policy, it's going to have to be pretty structured because I'm learning quite a bit during this podcast. However, it is creating more questions. I need more education about this to get really involved in it. And, you know, Grace, you mentioned about the essentials. Of course, the accrediting bodies, CCNE, ACEN, CNEA, all of those accrediting bodies in nursing require in-depth technology exposure and integration in the curriculum, including a working knowledge of informatics. So good deal. You know, I was thinking your article will be beneficial to our listeners. And so again, I encourage our listeners to obtain your article. And through work that you're doing with the article and presentations and probably more studies and research in this area, you're amplifying the visibility and the need for all of these technologies in all of their forms, the pros and the cons. And you're also influencing policy development in this area. So good deal, and I appreciate the work that both of you are doing. Well, thank you, Grace and Steph, for sharing your expertise with listeners and also spending time with me.
Thank you so much, Richard, for having us.
Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
Same here. Best wishes. This ends the podcast.